are the voice of trucking.
Welcome to Key Up New York, the official podcast of the Trucking Association of New York. My name is Zach Miller. I'm the director of Metro Region Operations for TANI, and I'm joined today by Peter Goldwasser, who's the executive director of Together for Safer Roads, or TSR. And you know, we'll talk about some of the really cool initiatives that Peter and TANI are working on. But Peter, first of all, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Tell me the quick history of, I like the name, Key Up New York. What's the background there?
I think, if I recall, we had a list of sort of like 10 names that we kind of thought would be appropriate for the podcast. And I think we narrowed it down to 3. And then I think this is the one we liked. There is just something very sort of like old school truck about it, but still had that, like, you know, we got the New York in there, a little modern. I think it was between this and TANI Talks, and sometimes we still call it TANI Talks, but I like Key Up. I think it's just like key it up, dial it in, let's get ready to roll.
I like that. We have TSR Talks with a little alliteration, but you know, for our series of webinars. But it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Absolutely. And for our longtime listeners and viewers, know that typically when we have a first time guest on, there's a host of icebreaker questions, and we pick one and we ask them. But occasionally we forego that when there's an interesting tidbit related to our guest. And I'm going to go ahead and take that option right here, because Peter and I, both of our families were featured in the New York Times style section about a month apart from each other, which was just really, really cool. And it was like, I remember, I think it was over Christmas break, I was reading the section and I was like, I know this guy. And then a month and a half later, Peter and I are on a call and he's just like, I saw that article in the Times that you were in. So if you could just, you know, tell them what that was about and how that came to play.
Yeah. And neither of us are too stylish. So it's funny that we tricked some people and got in there. No, in December, we were myself and the family were sort of profiled in the Sunday routines. And so it was quite surreal, but the Times came, and, you know, I usually get up quite early, go for a long run through Brooklyn. And so the photographer met me there at like, you know, 6 in the morning. He was on a bike, and then we get the bagels and the lox and the newspaper and go to the library. And so we had the whole day mapped out, and it was cool. My sister didn't think it was real. She thought I made the whole thing up. Even though she was reading the paper, she's like, you printed this fake.
That's surprising. Because I obviously don't know you as well as your sister, and I'm reading this, I'm like, this tracks. Like, this is exactly how, like, this is how I would have assumed he spends his Sundays.
Well, that's good. Yes. So, and yeah, then I saw you and for the wedding, and so that was wonderful.
Yeah, that was really cool. And that, so it's funny. I wanted the one that you were in, because I was saying to my now wife, I was like, that would be really cool if they profile, you know, you run a small off-Broadway theater. Like, that would be a cool profile, how, you know, Jill Rafson spends her Sundays. And she's like, I'll look into it. And then literally like a week or two after we had this conversation, they did that profile about somebody who runs a different off-Broadway theater. And she's like, well, I guess that's gone.
But you have to wait.
Yeah, exactly. So she's like, but you know what? Maybe let's try for the wedding. And we got the wedding one in there. So that was really cool. And we have it, you know, framed in our living room right now.
That's fantastic.
So I guess another thing, you know, we do have in common, of course, is, you know, we are transportation professionals that really, you know, at the forefront of what we do is safety. The state associations are safety organizations, and we have the numbers to back it up, that if you are a member of a state association, you are a safer carrier than your peers are. And certainly, you know, you see this all across the country with your members at Together for Safer Roads. So, you know, one of the things that as TANI we've been looking to do for a while is to come up with a really robust training program. for members to take advantage of. And we're so excited to have partnered with Together for Safer Roads on the focus for fleet safety program.
That's fantastic, as are we. And so, you know, for your listeners who maybe aren't familiar, Together for Safer Roads is an international NGO, and our primary mission and charge is to utilize the resources and knowledge and expertise of our members, who are some of the largest fleets in the world, everyone from UPS and PepsiCo to Anheuser-Busch to Republic Services, plus leading hardware software companies, so Samsara, Lytics, Motive, et cetera, Roscoe, and figure out how we can discreetly address specific concerns and issues that affect fleet safety, both for large fleets, medium fleets, small fleets. One of the ways that we do that is through our Focus on Fleet Safety program, as you mentioned. And, you know, this came about a couple of years ago through some research. We asked our Global Leadership Council, which is comprised of all the smart folks from the different members, to give us a sense of some critical issues right now affecting small and mid-sized fleets, which represent about 88% of the fleets on the road. And what they came back with was that, you know, not surprisingly, these fleets often don't have the internal resources and expertise and capacity to develop comprehensive safety systems and cultures of safety. So not necessarily the driver training program, which is obviously related, but a step before and above that, the overarching safety culture that then informs and improves the actual driver training. And so based on those insights and then a bit of what London has done on the FORS program, we spent the next period of time coming up with this comprehensive program, three different pillars: technology, training and development, and leadership, and began to offer it in cohorts of around 10 fleets to different entities. And so we've done it a couple different times. And then this year, we expanded it and created an asynchronous version to sort of open it up more. It still has the community aspect where the group meets, but the modules themselves are able to do on their own time. And so I think when you and I were chatting maybe a year ago now, and sort of realizing that, you know, you as an entity and an association have a phenomenal group of fleets that could potentially benefit from this type of program. And, you know, our mission and charge and responsibility is to try to help out where we can. And so it was a perfect alignment, I think.
Oh, completely. And that is so spot on, where, you know, one of the challenges is what people don't quite realize, you know, we do because we're in it every day, but you know, the outside public doesn't realize that the majority of freight is moved by these small and mid-sized carriers. That really is the bulk of what makes up this industry. And there become issues of, you know, their resources and their ability to put together programs as comprehensive as this. And I think another component of this, as you said, is the culture. It really does start with culture. You know, that's something that our members, particularly our members that are really involved in our safety council, you know, preach all the time. By the time you actually get to the driver component, if the culture hasn't been set, it doesn't really matter so much how focused you are on the driver. You know, it's already, you're already playing from behind, so to speak.
I think that's exactly right. We were just on a conversation with another cohort that we're doing, and, you know, it's centered around, well, what happens if, and how do we track if the driver didn't properly engage X brake, and how can we track that? And that's certainly important. But if what we find is if that behavior is situated or contextualized within a larger environment of, well, why should you do that? Why is that so critical? This is not a punitive thing if you don't do it. But if you begin to improve the former, you then are able to be more successful when you introduce, and how do you train, right? Like, what are the best practices around introducing and around training itself? So one of the pillars around training and development, what does good, successful, effective training look like from, and not just my opinion, but what is the best practice? What do the researchers say in terms of how you motivate people around these issues? So all of that sort of goes into the program, and then what you exit with is a much more rigorous, robust, informed culture of safety. And then you can begin to build out the specific applications. The program also includes beginning and ending benchmarking, and then a whole slew of templates to be able to modify to your, you know, how do you begin to evaluate technology that you may or may not have? And just simple stuff like, you know, here's a template spreadsheet that you can begin to make specific to your end, to your fleet, kind of lowering the bar and streamlining stuff because everyone's super busy, right? It comes back to the end of the day, the person that maybe is picking up the phone and answering the call is also the head of safety. So how do we make their jobs as easy as, or easier as possible?
Yeah, and I think there are two components. There are a lot of components to this, of course, but there are two components to that point that I think are really, really important to touch on. And one of them is the peer-to-peer learning aspect of this program. So that, you know, like you say, the best practices are available to them. And if there is that scenario where the fleet manager also has to do something else, maybe as part of their job function, they have the resource of all these other fleet managers at their fingertips that they can, you know, bounce ideas and strategies off of.
Exactly.
The other thing that I think is really great, and this is a pain point that has been identified by some of our members, is where they make the investments in the safety technology. Mm-hmm. They do. And that is, we're seeing such great adaptation all across the industry right now in the safety tech. However, sometimes what happens is, you know, you have a great conversation with the sales team, you kick it up the ladder and the company makes this investment, and then the sales team hands it off to another division. And lo and behold, there's the communication isn't as strong. And now fleets have this equipment that they're not properly trained in how to use, therefore negating the safety aspect of it. Focus has a solution to that.
I think that's exactly right. You know, and you see that in particular with a lot of, let's say, one of the solutions being telematics, right? And it's only as good as, you know, you can have all the data in the world and all the complicated, fancy whiz-bang technology, but if it's not trained on, introduced correctly, positioned, you know, we see that with cameras, right? And in-cab cameras in particular. And it can be perceived as perhaps punitive and versus these are actually there for exculpatory. And we know that you're a safe driver. And there's lots of incidences where we're seeing that we're able to then, that, let's say the city of New York, you know, is able to then use the film to exculpate the drivers. Mm-hmm. Also tremendous opportunities for training and development in terms of watching. But yeah, I think as a general proposition, we approach in the Focus program approaches technology in sort of a neutral way where it's not good or bad. It has the potential, but it really comes down to how do you train on it? What's the technology that's most useful for you? What's the new piece of equipment that's going to be helpful for your situation? How is it modified? How do you talk about it? How do you understand it? So there's a lot of, you know, to use fancy words, right? A lot of like change management theory. And what does that look like? How do you manage change and introduce these ideas? How do you train the trainers, right? Not everyone, just because you may be, that's another thing that we talk about, just because you may be a phenomenally safe driver, let's say, that doesn't mean are also necessarily in a position to be a good coach. Maybe you are, but those are two different skill sets. And so what does it mean to be a good coach? How do you identify good coaches within your fleets?
That's exactly right. And that's where I think, you know, when the fleets start to get enrolled in these cohorts and start to get deep into it, I think they'll realize how maybe they were putting a little too much pressure on one or two drivers or one or two components of their training. And this really shifts it around properly. And I think that's such a great point where I know, you know, we have fleet managers that the fleet manager will handle a bulk of the training, but where they really need that sort of leader driver is to get buy-in to some of, you know, the safety programs, mm-hmm. and to technology and things like that. And that becomes a whole challenge. And so I think if there's a way using this program to make that process easier, all of a sudden that barrier of, or maybe that friction, I would say, between sort of management and driver starts to erode and everybody could see, hey, we're on the same page here. And that page is safety. And it's about making sure we get home safe at the end of the day and the people around us get home safe at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Zach. That's well said there.
So another just quick thing about this, and you mentioned it, the Forest Program in London. Now, this is really an interesting program, and New York City DOT has brought this up to us. I think maybe it was 5 years ago at this point that they brought up forests, and maybe it was something that Tanny wanted to look at or that the industry wanted to look at. But what exactly did FORS do or does FORS do that is such a successful template that cities from around the world really want to replicate it?
It's a good question. I think what they did is, you know, first and foremost, they sort of identified the need for a comprehensive approach to supporting these fleets. And then they went about creating a program based on best practices and informed by the actual fleets themselves. So I think it's probably really those two things that proved to be quite successful. And it's continued to be iterative, flexible. It's adapted over the years to reflect new teachings and technologies and theories and so forth. But I think really in the beginning, it was just they identified this need and then, you know, came up with a solution that was appropriate for the constituency.
And that right there is why we fell in love with the Focus program, because it is really by fleets for fleets. And it's not rigid. It's a living, breathing system, just as safety programs are. And this is something that fleets know that, hey, everything that we go through in this cohort has been gone through by all these other fleets around the country. And, you know, as Tanny's cohorts come online around New York, and I think there's that level of comfort there, knowing that we are all in this together. When we're on the road, we're all in this together, and this is going to make us all much safer operators.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, and as we were talking before we started recording, we just launched a cohort with the National Waste and Recycling Association. We only work with folks that have good acronyms, TANI, NWRA. And, you know, some of the fleets were, it was a really inspiring kickoff in that they were quite earnest and direct in what they're hoping to get for. And it was to become safer, to learn from others, to have that group dynamic, to hear from experts, and just to slowly, incrementally improve safety cultures. Both, you know, wildly big picture and also wildly direct and simple at the same time. Not easy, but very clear in terms of what they're marching towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think it's a good point to remember is that for most companies, your safety program didn't get off track right away. And it's not going to get back on track right away. But this is a huge, huge step in the right direction. This is something that you'll be able to utilize as you move forward and really shift into that culture of safety that we talk about. That's the heart of all of this.
Absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to it. I know that we have plans to kick it off in the next couple of months, and I can't wait to sort of meet your members and hear about their experiences and what they're doing and how they're thriving and starting to support them.
That's exactly it. So if you are a TANI member and you're interested in either, you know, signing up for the cohort or you want to learn more, please feel free to reach out to me, reach out to Kendra, you can reach out to Peter at TSR. And if you are not a TANI member, well, then you really should reach out to us because this is a benefit for TANI members right now.
Everybody who's anybody is a TANI member. That is what I hear on the street.
Perfect, Peter. Thank you so much for joining us. Really, really
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
No, really appreciate the work that you do at TSR and just, you know, excited to keep working together with you here.
Fantastic.
For all of you listening, please remember to like, subscribe, and share and comment. Only good comments, of course. And we'll see you next time at Key Up New York.